You're listening to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB. A new financial year is looming and the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, will reveal the contents of the famous red box to Parliament in the spring budget on Wednesday, the 15th of March. Commentators eagerly await the budget, which is expected to deliver the government's next steps in addressing public finances. Although AHDB can't give you the heads up on the contents of the red box, as a levy payer, you are able to get some insight into the outlook for your sector for the coming months. Business managers know that having a handle on these matters is important, especially after a period of such economic uncertainty and cost rises, pushing inflation and interest rates to levels not seen in years. Lots of factors affect farmers' input costs, world events and supply and demand included, coupled with cautious consumer behaviour. I'm John Bates, and in the podcast today, we are focused on the outlook prepared by AHDB's market analysts. The agri-market outlook for the arable sector is produced every 6 months, and my first guest, Sarah Baker, will set the scene and give us some context. Then we will welcome a couple of other guests to talk about the specifics for the cereals and oilseeds sector. Hi, Sarah. Welcome back to the podcast.
Morning, John.
So you're an economist working in AHDB. The turmoil of the economy with the cost of living crisis, that must be keeping you on your toes, if not a little worried for farmers trying to plan for the immediate future.
You're so right, John. I think inflation is a huge story for the economy this year and will dominate going into 2023. So it's a key issue for everyone.
So Sarah, just explain, if it's not too dim a question, why is inflation such an issue for farmers?
Well, inflation is a key issue for everyone. And as we all know, the rate of inflation is the highest we've seen for 30 years plus. Those of us old enough to remember it, remember just how damaging it is to an economy because it erodes people's real incomes. And the measures taken to combat high inflation, so raising interest rates to sort of choke off demand and limiting those wage increases are hurting people. But the reason it's hurting farmers even more is they're sort of hit both ends. They get a double whammy, if you like. They're paying those higher input prices that the inflation has been predominantly driven by fuel prices. So they're paying much higher prices for their fuel and their fertilizer. And then they're affected by the measures taken to combat inflation. So they're hit by those high interest rates that most farmers run an overdraft or, you know, they've got costs of borrowing. But those high interest rates also affect consumer demand. Consumers are seeing higher mortgage rates. They're seeing inflation. They're seeing that erode their disposable income. And they're going to be much more careful regarding their spending patterns. They're looking for value for money. So they're being hit both on higher inputs and by this sort of loss of consumer confidence and the dampened down consumer demand for their output.
OK, now there's also the impact of the war in Ukraine, which is continuing. And obviously there's a great deal of disruption to farming and the planting of crops for the next season. Does that impact positively or negatively for British farmers?
Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster, the war in Ukraine. You know, nothing, economic forecasting is always incredibly challenging. Nothing is set in stone. But the last couple of years with COVID and the war in Ukraine has meant that forecasting is even harder. But what we saw in the initial invasion is commodity prices soaring and input prices soaring. They have settled somewhat, but they're still strong. So they're the positives, if you like, the strong market prices from 2022. And many farmers have sort of benefited from those prices. But as we go into 2023, those input prices will come more sharply into focus. If in 2022 farmers had already bought their inputs and therefore were benefiting just from the high prices, but from inputs bought in 2021 or before, then they would have seen their net margins increase. But this year, as they are paying much, much higher prices for those fertilisers and inputs and the fuel, they will see that net margin eroded. Prices are coming down. that they will see significant changes in their farm business income. And that story is going to dominate in 2023, really, that squeeze on farmers' incomes that is exacerbated by the removal of direct payments.
OK, so just while I've got you then, let's just talk about this direct payments issue, sort of a more general point. DEFRA's announced some changes to the Sustainable Farming Incentive Scheme. Should farmers be taking a closer look now because some of the parameters have altered?
I think it's really important that farmers explore all opportunities at the moment. They're facing a very challenging year for their businesses, as I've previously outlined, with the cost of inputs. They're also facing the removal of direct payments. So there's going to be this sort of hole in their income that they are going to be looking to fill. And the government schemes is one option, if you like, to sort of address that shortfall. What we've seen in the recent announcements of SFI is that there are more standards announced, and there's also been a lot more detail on the Countryside Stewardship Scheme, which is the scheme that's going to sort of take over from the previously named Local Nature Recovery. So the Countryside Stewardship and SFI can go in tandem. It is complex. There are a lot of layers out there. There are a lot of different standards for the same similar output. So if you look at hedgerows, for example, you can claim money under Countryside Stewardship for certain aspects of your hedgerows. You can claim money under SFI for other aspects of your hedgerows, provided the government isn't paying twice for exactly the same public good. So what that means is farmers really need to delve into the detail and start looking at the art of the possible. What standards can they layer on top of other standards, and where are the major opportunities? And that's something that AHDB will be looking into in the coming months, and really sort of trying to delve into that detail and find out what the best possible path of action for farmers are. But it's going to vary hugely from farm to farm. So I would strongly encourage our levy payers to start looking at the detail, scrutinising the detail and seeing what's appropriate within their businesses.
And once that detail's available, I'm sure that will be a topic of another podcast. So
absolutely, that will be a whole podcast in itself.
OK, thank you very much, Sarah. Megan Hesketh is also down the line. Hi, Megan. Thanks very much for sparing time to come on the podcast. Just to start with, tell us what you do for levy payers.
Hi, John. Thanks very much for having me. I am a senior analyst for cereals and oilseeds. So hopefully a lot of our listeners do receive some of our publications, which are primarily the market report that we send out each week. You're talking about what's happening in cereals and oilseeds markets and what we can expect from price direction going forward. And then also our grey market dailies, which we take a look at specific factors and, you know, analyse those and what impact they could have to global and domestic prices as well.
OK, so you sound just the right guest then for this podcast. We've got that bit right. Thank you. So let's just talk about prices here at home. Obviously, there's been some strong global prices, which has helped producers. And that's been aided, unfortunately, because of the war in Ukraine. But prices have come down a little bit from the season's sort of previous highs. What can we expect going forward here at home and abroad?
Yeah, great question. Thanks very much, John. So ultimately, this season, the UK has a heavier balance of cereals. And what that means is a subsequent larger exportable surplus. Though we are seeing UK prices tracking European and global market movements pretty closely, and they're going to continue to do that. So that's the first thing. So let's think about price direction fundamentally on the global market. As you say, you know, we did see prices peak back in May 2022. Recently, we have been seeing prices drifting back, but fundamentally, they are staying supported at those high levels. So the war ongoing in Ukraine, as well as trimmed production that we've seen in major global exporters over the previous seasons. And that's kept, you know, a tight supply on the global market and given sort of support level within global prices as well. We are seeing large supplies of Russian wheat currently weighing down on the market as that picks up quite a bit of global demand, especially in the Middle East and North African areas. We are seeing, you know, strong demand for EU wheat and grains as well. And, you know, with the escalation of the war in Ukraine and continuous volatility that we're seeing in prices, we are seeing some support levels and volatility in those prices. But overall, you know, we have been seeing those prices drift back as we see, you know, pretty competitive Russian supplies, especially on the global market. Going forward, you know, maize, the supply and demand balance for maize is going to be really important. It's relatively tight, global supply and demand balance. Watch points are certainly in Argentina, because it's been very dry out there. And maize provides a floor to the grain market as such. So that's why the maize price is pretty crucial. And also going forward, you know, the war in Ukraine likely to continue with the volatility that we're seeing in markets. The Black Sea Initiative export corridor is due for renewal in March. And so that ultimately could bring some volatility into prices. And also, you know, as we progress through the season and we head towards next season, new crop weather will definitely be super important for the second half of this season. You're looking ahead, US crop conditions and any damage, you know, caused by extreme cold, dry conditions will be assessed. So that's a little bit of a run through, you know, what are the key factors driving going forward, and ultimately, you know, the demand side as well, not just the supply side, but, you know, how tight that demand and supply balance is. So like Sarah says, you know, in terms of the impact on the economy of inflation, you know, economic performance and recessionary behavior, that'll also be, you know, really crucial to, you know, that supply and demand balance globally and domestically.
Okay, so let me just pick up on that then, that sort of that domestic demand. What are the current challenges then, and the impact on cereal usage?
Yeah, great question. I think, you know, the key areas that I would say key challenges and, you know, impact on cereal usage is firstly animal feed, and secondly, you know, a big watch point around biofuels. So if I start off with animal feed, you know, overall animal feed demand is expected to fall this season, and as such, so cereal usage is as well. Total cereal usage for animal feed is actually currently forecast to be the lowest since 2016-17, and mostly due to the challenges on those monogastric sectors. So thinking about the poultry sector especially, you know, the challenges facing the poultry sector from avian flu to tightening margins, and pig feed production as well is expected to continue to fall back this season, as the backlog of pigs on farm caused by those labour shortages at abattoirs is thought to be all but cleared. So those are some key challenges there. And also, you know, with the hot and dry conditions that we saw over summer, that has had an impact on forage quality and availability for some areas and regions, which has boosted some feed requirements. So that is offsetting, you know, some of that fallback from those monogastric sites. But generally, you know, the cost of living crisis is also a big key watch point on the animal feed side. Moving over to biofuels, I think that's the, you know, the second big key watch point for domestic cereal usage. Usage of homegrown wheat in bioethanol production is a key watch point. Following the introduction of E10 by the UK government in September 2021, we did see Vivergo reopen, meaning that two bioethanol plants are operational. And it's assumed both bioethanol plants will remain operational for this season, but they're not expected to be running at full capacity, in part due to those longer maintenance periods. And I think the key thing to think about is the high input costs that we've seen for bioethanol production, and significantly lower bioethanol prices. And as such, from earlier in the season, you know, the outlook for bioethanol cereal usage has diminished significantly from what we were expecting at the start of the season. And that'll remain, you know, a key watch point. So even though it potentially is stronger usage on the season, you know, the impact of those higher input costs, especially and lower bioethanol prices, will remain a key watch point.
Okay, so let me make you look forward. Let's concentrate on the new season in July. What can we expect from the harvest this year?
Yeah, so back in December, we released the regional survey results for our early bird survey for planting and planting intentions for that harvest 2023 crop. Pretty unsurprisingly, since with the favourable autumn drilling conditions that we saw, if there's a strong continuation of winter cropping expected. In those results, you know, on a national level, the wheat area is forecasted up 1% from 2022, and that winter barley area is also forecast up 4%. However, the spring barley and the oat area are anticipated to shrink, but overall, you know, that wheat and winter barley area especially are looking pretty strong. Within the outlooks, we've actually produced some harvest scenarios as well, using the minimum, maximum and averages over the past 5 harvests. So that's definitely take a look at those. In terms of, you know, what our crops are looking like, you know, relatively faring well. So as at the 29th of November, the winter wheat crop was rated 87% good to excellent condition on our latest crop development report. And that's up 3 percentage points from a year earlier. You know, generally, the wheat crop is pretty well established. And overall, the prospects look pretty good. I think the key areas just to think about is ongoing dry conditions and, you know, drought conditions expected from the National Drought Group to last up until spring, you know, in some regions. So something to think about. And also, you know, as Sarah mentioned earlier on, you know, the high fertilizer prices. You know, we're expecting many growers to reduce their P&K applications for harvest 2023. So definitely something to think about, especially considering, you know, the strong winter cropping forecasts that we have, and plus, you know, what that might mean for high specification grains specifically. You know, overall, crops are looking pretty good. There's just a few watch points specifically for harvest 23 on that fertilizer application and also those dry conditions in some areas.
Megan, thank you very much. That sounds like an analyst being optimistic, which is that's a good thing. Last but not least, Anthony Spate is waiting also in the wings. So thank you for being so patient, Anthony. Just join us and first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do for Levy Payers.
Hi, John. Well, thanks for having me on. My name's Anthony and I'm also a senior analyst at the AHDB, and I work looking at cereal and oilseed markets and what's driving prices.
Okay, so let's kick off with talking about the domestic prices for rapeseed. And all of this, you know, is against the backdrop of the fact that we've touched several times on the impact that the war in Ukraine is having. Yeah. So just tell us a little bit about how prices have sort of gone up and gone down and what we can expect going forward.
Well, even before the crisis between Russia and Ukraine, rapeseed prices were historically high off the back of a drought in Canada, which meant that their premium was way above other oilseed prices. So obviously the war just exacerbated this. But as we've gone into this marketing year, rapeseed prices have lost their premium to other oilseeds, and they're trading at near soybean prices now. So that premium's gone. So spot prices for rapeseed, you know, as of Friday, I'll date stamp it just in case anyone's listened to this a couple of weeks later, as of the 10th of Feb, is £476. And it's also the same for harvest. So we've seen these historically high prices that were over £500 come down. And rapeseed prices now are going to be largely dictated by the price of soybeans. And soybean prices recently have been a little bit supported off the back of the demand for biofuels in the US and the use of soy oil as a feedstock. And then also from, as Meg mentioned, the La Nina weather event in South America, which has brought some revisions to Argentina's soybean crop. So this is kind of, rapeseed prices have come down to this floor of soybeans. But what's critical to know going forward for rapeseed prices, they're going to be largely dictated by these soybean prices. And the market is very fixated on pricing this risk of Argentina's crop being revised down slightly by this La Nina weather event. But we have a record Brazilian soybean crop, which is coming to the market right now. Brazil's soybean harvest has just started, which could have the ability to weigh on soybean prices over the next few months, which will inherently weigh on rapeseed prices.
Okay, so supply and demand is key. So what you're saying is there appears to be plenty of supply. What about the demand? What can we expect sort of globally and domestically? Rapeseed, I should say.
For rapeseed, global supply and demand have both increased on the year. We've had increased availability in Europe from a larger production and also larger import from Ukraine and Australia, which is adding to price pressure and also improving processor margins. So this is increasing demand. This is also being fed into our domestic market. So demand is expected to remain strong for this marketing year, despite the closure of Hull at the end of 2022. However, forward looking, John, as we head towards harvest, the balance in Europe will become heavier for the next marketing year because Europe is expected to produce a large production again. If this large crop comes to market, we can expect prices to be weighed on next year from a heavier EU balance, which will inherently filter in to our domestic prices. And also further to that, this bearishness of this market could be reinforced by a potential surplus of rape oil. So obviously we've got a lot of crushing going on at the moment, high demand, great margins, and we're going to have this huge amount of global rape oil. So production of this has grown faster than the consumption. And the demand from China has been quite lackluster recently. And their rape oil stocks have been worked down to, you know, historical lows. So over the next few months, what will be a key watch point is the demand from China, to whether they're going to replenish the stock, are they going to import rapeseed, are they going to import rape oil, and what happens there. But this is just, there's going to further add to what is a bearish outlook for oilseeds.
After a few years of challenging rapeseed sowing, let's just look ahead a little bit for the new season. And what can we expect in 23?
Well, yes, we've had a challenging few years for growers. So obviously, as I mentioned, even before the crisis, we had these historically high prices. So off the back of this, we are seeing, you know, the incentive to go back to sowing rapeseed. So in our early bird survey, which is intentions as at November 22, our estimated rapeseed area is at 416,000 hectares. So this is the highest area since 2019. So we've had an increase in every single region apart from Wales and Northern Ireland. So in regions such as the Northwest, Yorkshire and the Humber and West Midlands, where obviously the pest pressure of the cabbage stem flea beetle is not as prevalent, we are noting these areas are only just behind 2019 figures. So as far as crops go, they've all in all, anecdotally, there hasn't been, you know, a huge cause for concern, but just as an overview, in the north of England, the oilseed rape crop is generally looking very well, with soil moisture better than the south. Farmers are able to drill their crop earlier, so crops are advancing, and the earlier drill crops has meant that they have missed the cabbage stem flea beetle migration. In the south, crops are generally looking well despite the cold snap. About 70 to 80% of what was established in the autumn is going to be carried through, and these crops are starting to show signs of new growth with minimal disease reported. But what's critical to note is what is noted in our early bird survey at this 416,000 hectares doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to harvest that. So as we produce a survey every single year, which is our planting variety survey, which comes out in July, which is, you know, will be planted area as at the coming harvest, so for harvest 23. So that is a survey I definitely encourage any levy players, growers listening to this podcast to, when it comes out, to definitely fill out their information, because the more information we get, you know, the more we can stand by the figures that we produce.
Okay, so Anthony, my sort of take from that and from what Megan was saying is that really sounds quite optimistic. Sarah, can I just finally bring you in? Is that your take? Optimistic?
I would just add a note of caution. Economists are never optimistic, John. You know that. The dismal science. I would add a note of caution and say that given the current volatility within the economy and the very sluggish growth, and given the sort of rapid change in domestic policy here in England and across the devolved nations, that farmers have a lot to deal with at the moment. So the positive reports that Megan and Anthony have just given us, I think is encouraging, but I think that has to be tempered with the background and the operating conditions that UK agriculture is experiencing at the moment.
Sarah's always one to bring realism to the scenario. So thank you very much indeed. So thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Megan and Anthony, for sharing your insight. For more information about markets and the other reports that Megan and Anthony highlighted, those can be found on the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk. If you've got any comments about this podcast, or you would like to be a guest because you've got something of interest to say to levy payers, or you just want to suggest a topic for a future episode, please get in touch. You can email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk. This podcast was produced by Chloe Kimberley. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.